A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music. Hey, welcome to the 161st episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patrons Donald Evans and Evelyn Belasco. I'm Warren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow. Today we've got Ted Sim. He's the president of Aperture Lighting, which is the fastest growing cinema lighting company. And he's also the host of the newly relaunched Indie Mogul. So we get deep with Ted about the state of digital media and the future of filmmaking, how filmmakers get hired. It kind of all swirls around basically the idea of how you brand yourself and why you should or shouldn't, and how you brand yourself as an artist and entrepreneur and technologist and all of that stuff kind of swirling around each other over and over again.
Yeah, the thing that stuck out to me about the interview is when Ted said that the internet won and we've got to get over it. His view is, as much as people like Matt and I try to say we're directors, not content creators, that at the end of the day, creating that content is that's part of being a director, part of being a filmmaker, and part of accepting the new paths into Hollywood, I guess.
Yeah, which is funny because I think you and I both certainly made our name and our careers by being innovative online. And so I think it's a fascinating thing that I'm going to think about for a long while, of just like what my stance is now on the way that people come up, and also the way that my opinion of myself has changed and what I want it to be and what I want to push towards. And, you know, it's a really interesting, fascinating, introspective sort of conversation. Ted also has a podcast. Indie Mogul has its own podcast. And so, you know, there were instances where the tables turned a little bit and Ted was interviewing us. So he's a real cool guy, very passionate, really curious about a lot of different avenues, and has explored them. And so I think he's a really awesome guest. It's a really good one.
Before we talk to Ted, we're going to do a real quick catch up just because Matt and I have been all over the place recently. So yeah. Matt, what's going on with you?
I am shooting a new series. The thing I'm most excited about right now is we kind of sometimes talk about brainstorming title sequences and things like that. And I thought, oh, I'm going to kind of just dig around on Vimeo and see what the cool new trends are, what are people doing, and find some inspiration that way. It's kind of the Tim Nakashi approach. And it worked. I'm doing a Tiny Planet intro sequence. It really works really thematically well with the story that I'm telling and the people. And it's like really community oriented and stuff.
Wait, when you say Tiny Planet, do you mean like a small CG Earth that has things on it?
Yeah, so you can use that. Is the effect is what I'm talking about. Have you seen how you can get like a 360 cameras, like GoPro has one called the Fusion. There's a bunch of them out there that basically can take a 360 image, and then if you put it on a selfie stick and put it up kind of high, you can invert the image so that basically it looks as though the world that you're walking on is like a tiny little globe, and that all of the buildings are just kind of sticking out of it. And then the sky just kind of bleeds off into infinity.
Oh, yeah. I think I've seen glimpses of that online. That's called Tiny Planet.
Tiny Planet. Yeah. And so I'm really excited. It's going to be a fun montage of a bunch of different things. I think it's going to be special and cool. And I'm very excited about kind of like just digging in on how to execute that through tutorials and kind of trial and error.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, I'm excited. Oren, what have you been working on lately?
I was going to talk about two things. One is that I worked on this pretty big campaign for this company that's supposed to IPO for, like, some people are saying over $100 billion. And we teamed up with a film studio to promote their movie, and we spent tens of thousands of dollars.
This is like a big brand that everyone has heard of, but you can't say, basically.
Yeah, and I'll tell you why I can't say in a second. But we had a process trailer. We shot on Hollywood Boulevard. We had all sorts of awesome things that we did for it, and we worked very hard to make it as good as it can be, and pulled favors and did all those things, and really fought about the script, fought about the production, fought about the locations, fought about the makeup, the casting, every single step of the way. We fought in the edit and the edit, and like, let's put this joke in and take
that
joke out.
You're passionate about it. You're really delivering. Yeah.
And really putting our blood, sweat, and tears into trying to make it as good as it can be, even though it's like a corporate, advertisement of sorts.
It's branded content, I think, is
famous. Yeah. It was a three-minute branded video that both promoted a movie and a company.
Right. So it's
a partnership.
It's for an audience. It's not an internal video, basically. Right.
And I just found out on Friday that this company decided to kill the project completely. And I wish this was the first time it happened to me. It's not, but it's just like, it's crazy.
Such
These companies
bummer.
Can pour in like $500,000, $1 million into something. And I know, like, Steve Jobs was famous for shooting like eight iPad spots and only using one. But it's just like, I don't know. It was such a bummer because you work so hard and you get so excited and you tell all your friends about it and like, oh, I can't wait till you see this. And then they're like, yeah, you can't put it on your website. You can't show it to anyone. You can't tell anyone about it.
The thing about not being able to put it on your website is a bummer.
Yeah, and now it's not edited, it's not going through color, it's not going through sound mix.
Oh, interesting. I mean, stopped before they even took it all the way through.
Yeah, there's a cut, which of course I didn't love because it got corporately ruined in many different ways by all, there's so many different people. But anyway, just like a reminder that those things happen and, you've got to keep...
To the best of us, man.
Yeah, and now I'm on, we're in post on this, the next project, actually with the same production company. The other thing is, two of our listeners, Desiree and Allie, who we know, I've known Allie Kornfeld from some other things, asked me to host a Q&A for their screening of their pilot.
Yeah, man, how'd it go?
It was really fun. It was at this place called the Rita House, which is like a co-working place in like West Hollywood.
Does it have margaritas?
They do have margaritas. Good. But a woman named Rita used to own it. And it's like kind of, you pay a monthly membership fee and you can go right there or hang out there. And they do like events. And it was cool. So if you are a member, which Desiree is a member, you can, you can do screenings or you can do events there. So she did this screening there. And there was a bunch of like industry people and friends. And then I just like did a Q&A. But it was kind of like the first hosting thing that I've done.
Sure.
Because people like... listen to the podcast and are like, hey, you're a friend and you host the podcast, you should be able to host this Q&A. So it was fun. So hopefully you should check it out. Their show is called The Influencers, and I'm sure it will be online at some point soon.
Hey, congrats, guys. Before we hop into our conversation with Ted, we have a couple other things to talk about. First of all, our Patreon. It's going great. I just got new stickers. I'll post a photo on Instagram of both our OG patrons, the special sticker. There's 150 of them. Literally, I'm looking at all of them right now. We're gonna hand number each of them for one out of 150. They're the kind of classic old school Just Shoot It logo with the coffee stain and the bullet holes and stuff. This is the retirement of that logo. And we've got brand new ones that I'm calling the Nike logo instead of Just Do It. Just Shoot It. It looks exactly like that classic Nike logo. So you can get that if you become a patron, or if you come to one of our shows, or if you write an iTunes review and shoot me an email. There's a lot of different ways to do it, but Patreon is the best way to keep supporting the show, paying our editor Jay, helping us kind of experiment with other things. And then the big ticket item, we still haven't totally figured out how we want to get these going, but our listener Curtis hooked us up. I'm wearing a Just Shoot It hat right now. So the same logo, the Nike logo, Just Shoot It, I'm wearing one. We'll post that online as well. We've got one trucker hat. I don't think we're going to get any more, but Oren got his trucker hat and the rest of us can wear dad hats. What do you think, Oren?
It's cool.
It's pretty cool, right?
Yeah. And I think it's like, I actually was on a film set today helping someone out. And there was like, the AC there was wearing a shirt that said like, when's lunch? When do we wrap? Can I go home now or whatever? Yeah. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot people wear a lot of this like kind of film related stuff on film sets. I think it's a perfect film set hat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just shoot it already.
Yeah, they can just point at it.
And yeah, if you feel like you got anything out of this podcast, patreon.com/justshootapod. You can help us out and show us that you are a supporter of the podcast. One other thing before we talk to Ted is iTunes reviews. These are a thing that can really help us a lot. And so we have come up with a friendly competition between us and a few other podcasts to see who can get the most iTunes reviews. So starting May 1st is when we are going to count them.
Yeah, it's us versus Light the Fuse versus Making Movies is Art versus Respect the Process. So it's a friendly competition between us and all of these other filmmaking podcasts who we're all friends with. But it would be really, really devastating for me personally if we didn't win this because I came up with the idea and texted everybody and got them on board. So you got to help us out. Get in there. You can, you know, rate and review other podcasts as well. That's fine. But get in there. Help the show out. Help promote us. We've got something on the line. The losers all have to read ad copy that the winner writes promoting their show and kind of whatever else they want to say. So like, God only knows what they would write for us. So
yeah. So the point is, leave us a review on iTunes, please. If you care at all about the show, it'll be really, really helpful. Between May 1st and May 31st.
Well, without any further ado, we'll wait. You go ahead and finally write that review you've been thinking of writing. Okay, you're back. Let's talk to Ted.
We're here with Ted Sim.
How's it going?
Indie mogul.
Do people ever call you Ted's IM?
Ted's Slim. Yeah. When I lose a lot of... Okay, we're off to a bad start.
So we like to start off bad because it can only get better.
Yeah, you're warming up.
Absolutely.
So Ted, you are the...
Owner. What,
owner?
Host.
Yeah. Owner and host of Indie Mogul, newly relaunched.
Wait, so Ted's IM is like Ted's Indie Mogul.
Oh, that's pretty good.
I am Indie Mogul. You're talking about like I am instant messaging?
No, like if somebody sees your Twitter name and it's like at Ted's IM, people assume it's your Indie Mogul.
Yes, absolutely. This is true.
Which it is. Okay.
Yeah. And you also have a lighting company called Aperture.
Indeed. So Indie Lighting Company and then Indie YouTube channel, which makes a lot of sense because we actually came from YouTube in the beginning. I think a lot of people don't know this. So
yeah, incredible. And you're also a DP as well, right?
Yeah, filmmaker, just shoot basically. You know, we were just
content
talking about
creator.
This. Online content creator, yeah. Right? And that's the thing that I think a lot of people, I think traditional people feel embarrassed to say, but you know
they
what?
Bristle at it?
It's a new world out there. And I think if you're not paying attention to it, if you come from the traditional world, you really should be paying attention to it because it's blowing up right now. And if you're from that world, you already know things are a little crazy out there.
Things are crazy. That is true.
I guess the reason that I think it's weird to say online content creator is because wouldn't you do stuff for traditional TV or movie theaters too if the right job came up?
Absolutely. I think the weird thing that's interesting too about the online filmmaking space is it's filmmakers making content about filmmaking. So it's like videos about video making. Mm-hmm. And then the dream for all these people is that they want to be doing the higher end set stuff. But you guys are also online content creators because you guys are making a podcast.
Wait, but would you say like Freddie W is an online content creator?
Oh, absolutely.
Even though he's making like fun, like a funny video game show.
Yeah, 100%.
That's not about filmmaking.
Well, I think he's an interesting example because he makes those shorts, but then he also has his own online filmmaking channel about making those shorts. So he teaches people the BTS. So I'm seeing a lot of filmmakers that are doing this new thing where they make their passion projects and then they either get them funded by camera companies that want to show off their gear or their cameras. So you look at an example like Film Riot, Ryan Connolly.
Sure.
Good friend of mine. honestly, I think he got over $100,000 just from gear companies to fund his short film that he wanted to do.
Oh.
And he got it from gear companies. We were one of the gear companies that actually contributed.
And are you contributing cash or are you contributing? Yeah. Wow.
So
it's
dependent. You know, there's some companies out there that give out, like I think Canon, Adobe, a lot of those companies are giving out more money these days. We also give out some money as Aperture too, just to support content creators. And it's like a weird new world of people that can do passion projects, horror films, that can do things like that out there. I think athletics is an awesome comparison, right? Because in the athlete, you know, there's only so much space for a number of professional athletes, but there's a ton of people that want to feel like professional athletes, that want to do this kind of stuff. And it's weird because we live in a weird world now where the motivational industry is almost bigger than the actual filmmaking industry. And I hate this, right? When people hear this,
wait, can you clarify? You're saying the filmmaking motivational industry.
I'm saying the filmmaking motivational industry.
So which, can you describe what that means?
So I think right now, anyone that's, if you're a filmmaker on Facebook, Facebook's going to target you ads, right? Mm-hmm. And you're going to see these advertisements of learn directing from, you know, Masterclass has this thing. Learn directing from James Cameron.
That powerful 50-50, man.
You've seen these already, right?
I have a Masterclass. Yeah. My wife got it for me.
You paid for it, or your wife paid for it. And it's crazy because there's a lot of new content out there. There's not really that many narrative filmmaking jobs out there. There's a ton of people that want to be filmmakers, as you guys know. Of course, you host a podcast. And because of that, there's a lot of gear companies or people that want to sell, you know, script advice. And like, it's very quick and easy to get into like the snake oil territory. Mm-hmm. But there are tons of legitimate companies that want to promote the stuff that they have on with filmmakers that are reputable, that have a reputation. So I think building up some kind of social media clout, if you're an indie filmmaker, you can open up all these other kind of revenues and channels and ways to make your passion project that are maybe a little different. And I think so many filmmakers out there, they just want to do the traditional thing. And it's like, look, the world is changing so fast. You got to, you know, maybe try something new. There's not that you have to do it, right? There's a million ways to make it. But I think people so quickly bat an eye to the online stuff that it's like, no, like there are legitimate filmmakers getting projects funded here. Mm-hmm. There are people that are, again, I think we were talking about this a little bit, but have you ever gone into a job and actually had them check your social media accounts? It's like mind-numbing, right? It's horrible to think about, but it's happening. It is.
I wanted to bring up one of our past guests, this guy named Michael Tucker. He has a YouTube channel called Lessons from the Screenplay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They just hit a million subscribers.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. So he does these video essays, right, deconstructing what makes the screenplay good or bad. Mm-hmm. And because of that, and because so many agents and managers and stuff know about his work, he's been approached to write screenplays, you know?
This is happening a lot, actually. You know, Tony Zhao, the guy that does painting? I have so many friends that teach film schools and stuff that have just told me, story after story after story, how many times they've begged this guy to come.
Oh, dude,
we've tried
to get
him on the podcast. Educational department. Yeah. Yeah, you guys have tried to get him on the podcast. And like, who would he be otherwise without this channel? He would be an editor, just a film editor among a sea of film editors.
Yeah, his wrist would click all the time.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And I think, you know, don't get me wrong, there's something that like is hard about, you know, be putting yourself out there in the same way that I'm sure it was hard for you guys to come out and be like, I'm going to have people listen to my voice,
it's a podcast,
hear things that I do. And like, you know, that's always kind of nerve wracking. But, you know, I think if you are an artist and you want to be able to be known for your voice, whether it's in your work, I think it's great. And I think you guys are doing it already. Honestly, I think I don't think it's that long. If you guys just keep doing this podcast, that someone will come along and just be like, I really like Matt's perspective on this thing. You know, I feel like he'd probably be great at this kind of thing.
I wonder. Yeah. I mean, we've gotten a few, the commercial gigs, but
what kind of commercial gigs have you gotten from the podcast?
I 2 years worth of Kentucky Lottery campaigns
from this podcast.
Yeah.
Guys,
shout out PBS Group.
Guys, the number of filmmakers that I'm sure listen to this, I wish I would get reached out in that. I mean, the number of... Okay, so the reason I think I'm so tucked into this world is because Aperture, we actually came from our head that started the company, came from a thing called Digital Rev TV. Do you guys know about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Digital Rev TV.
Digital Rev TV. So that sounds, kind of Kai W and Locke, they were originally, they were a Hong Kong like buy and sell camera store. Mm-hmm. They made this YouTube channel to start marketing their stuff. And then now the channel blew up so much that everyone just knows Digital Rev and they don't even know it's a camera store. Mm-hmm. What's interesting is that our CEO came from there and then he was like, oh, this YouTube thing is like crazy. I want to make gear for those guys. Mm-hmm. So he found me at the time. I was working over at Studio 71. Started working and basically what's interesting is that it was the two of us. We both came from YouTube. I'm Studio 71, so an MCN for online filmmaking. And then our last guy came from Fujifilm. Three of us together just made an indie gear company for online filmmakers. Mm-hmm. And part of that, like, I think the reason we blew up is because I just started reaching out and talking to a lot of these online guys, started just sending out gear saying, if you want to try this stuff, it's fine. What's weird about Aputure is that we never, honestly, like, now the studios use us, but we, for the longest time, it was just like no studios used us, but we were doing fine. We were doing better than most of the studio companies. And if you want a testament to just like how big this online filmmaking thing is, like every small business out there, every record label, everything, they all need content now. And those people, that's why content creator, I think, gets such a bad rep, because it's seen as like the unprofessional filmmaker. But those kids are getting good.
Sure.
Getting really good. And they're coming and they're raising up. And
Well, right. But that, to me, being called the content creator is like putting you in the box of like internet only.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's what I guess maybe turns us off. And I'm sure it's like because
when I hear content creator, I mean, I think you don't get to have a crew.
Yes, what I think. I hear one man band. You can't light things. Yeah. All natural lighting.
Or maybe can, but has a great eye, knows how to use a glide cam.
Yes.
You know, absolutely. Throws a GoPro up on another thing and has cool shots and
shoots
like
a time lapse, great travel film, but like cool. You're never actually on set. You're never going to see the sit-down dolly. You're never going to see this in action, you know?
One of the biggest insults I've had in my life is I got hired at Disney as a director to go because I had done this show and they liked it. And they were like, you should come in and direct this show. And then the guy that hired me, my boss, was like, hey, this is Oren Kaplan. He's a great new guy. And he's like going to be like a predator here. You know, he can do it all.
And you were like, I don't want to be a predator. I was like, I am not a predator. This is not what I do.
Yeah,
100%.
I was offended. Because that's to me what a video content creator is.
And to be clear, it's not offensive to be that person, right? But I guess what we are...
Guys, you guys are it, though. You guys are doing an online filmmaking podcast.
Yes, however...
You guys are online content creators that have been reached out to work.
No doubt. It's not about being afraid. It's not about being a traditionalist, because to us... Look, I don't care. I actually enjoy editing. Sometimes I enjoy VFX more than directing. You know, it depends on the job.
Yeah.
But when I like look at the people that I want to hire me, if I want to sell a show to Netflix, I feel like they will be more interested in me if I have like a voice and some sort of like creative vision than if I'm like good at After Effects, you know?
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying is don't promote yourself as like a VFX guy online if you want to be a director. But if you want to be a VFX guy, there's nothing wrong with taking a page out of Andrew Kramer's book. I mean, that guy just worked on Star Wars.
Yeah.
And he came from the internet.
I think we're talking about a couple different things here, really. I think it's like there's a difference between being a filmmaker who is known online and promoting themselves online, which I think we'd all have to be insane to not get behind for sure. And then I think that there's a new younger breed of filmmaker that is this predator that we're describing. And I think some of this also is just like Ord and I kind of came up in that world and like we feel like we graduated a little bit.
And you don't want to be in that online predator world.
Yeah. Well, you look
nobody
at
wants
well,
to
you look at a Damien
world.
Chazelle or you look at a Sam Zwiebelman who's on our last episode and you see like these guys didn't worry about the
views
gear.
And likes and views, gear. Right? And they didn't care about this because they were just damn good at telling a story.
Sure.
Yeah. And now you look at Deadline. You know, I mean, not that it matters at all, but the Deadline and Daily Variety, they're not writing about Matt's like 10 million viewed Facebook watch show.
Totally.
They're talking about Sam's like 500,000 viewed Hulu show, you know? And so it's like...
I think there's two ways to come up, right? You can come up the traditional way. You can do the Damien Chazelle model. You can do the David Lowery model where you just like indie feature after indie feature. And then finally you get noticed through the festival circuit. And then you got people like David Sandberg just did Shazam. I mean, that guy came up through online film. He did Lights Out, which is a short film, horror film online. Did tutorials of how he made his films on Vimeo. And now, bang, gets tapped for Annabelle.
Yeah,
that's my Gareth Edwards, right?
You're Gareth Edwards. So there's like...
My Gareth Edwards. I mean, that's... Yeah. I always like... He's like a guy I think... I see his career and I'm like, I'm kind of doing the same thing.
That makes sense. I think there is two ways to come up, but they're... Nobody is a predator because they really want to be a predator. Like, I mean, look, there's some people that come up and that are like,
sure,
ooh, I want to shoot weddings for the rest of my life. You know, like that person exists, yeah, right? Yeah. But I think the vast majority,
and they probably have genuinely a pretty great life.
Yeah, and they're probably very happy. Yeah, they're not deep seated with this.
They've got like a house in Wyoming
and need to prove themselves. Dude, and one be of the guys fulfilled. They don't have any of that. They don't have to worry about any of that.
One of the guys that recommended Aperture Lighting is like a guy that shoots like these amazing music wedding videos. Yeah.
Dude, wedding videos are. They, I'm telling you that these predator kids are getting sick.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, so just to put a pin in this conversation,
I
think we're all saying the same thing, and I think that maybe Oren and I are chafing a little bit at the idea of not being taken seriously.
As a predator.
And I think like...
Yeah.
It's the idea of like, what would you rather have, Matt? 100 million views on your cool celebrity parody video, or... A movie at Sundance.
Or an indie feature at Sundance. Yeah, of course. All of us would pick an indie feature at Sundance.
A short film at Sundance. How about that?
Yeah, even a short film. Easy. Of course.
All of us would want that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Wait, what do you mean all of us? I feel like you don't care about that as much.
I do care about that. I think all of these... That's why I'm saying that you can do this. You can do this online content world and get your short film totally financed. And you don't have to go onto Kickstarter and beg your friends for it. You can actually just have a legitimate business that you can sell to Canon and have them pay for your film. Like, the people are doing this.
But none of those Canon films are getting into Sundance.
They are, actually. They're doing great. They're doing fine. A lot of them, a bunch of them got into South by Southwest. These filmmakers are coming up. And that's what I'm saying is that it's so easy to not take them seriously. But these people don't want to be predators.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing predators. It's like the Beatles. You know, they didn't want to play in a crappy bar somewhere for 10 years. But they're in there. Yeah, yeah. They're shooting on their crappy glide cam.
They put in their 10,000 hours.
They're putting in an insane number of hours. They're cutting travel video after wedding after travel video after wedding. Yeah, and they're getting better at filmmaking.
IndieWire had an article that actually Making Movies It's Hard references as well in a recent episode of 50 South by filmmakers and how they make their living. Which I think we'll share in the show notes, is pretty interesting. And it's funny. I think it's really shaded by where you are personally in life. Because no one ever reads that article. You skim it, right? You're just kind of like scrolling past.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh yeah, most of these people are making a living as filmmakers, for sure. Maybe they're not full-time feature filmmakers only.
Yeah.
But they're not predators. You know, they're like, I direct, a handful of these things and that thing. You know, like... I've got a TV job, and this was the thing I shot out over hiatus or whatever, is what I see.
Yeah.
And we have peers that are like, oh, yeah, no one's making any money from filmmaking. No. Like, it's just like whoever's reading it.
If you're in the short film circuit on any of these major festivals, you're not making a lot of money from this stuff. You're probably taking commercials on the side.
Yeah,
you're probably doing. You can't. You just can't. It's literally like being a pro athlete. The number of people that get to play football for a living... There's not that many. I think you're wrong. I'm talking about narrative, artistic, like high-end movies.
People we've had 160 episodes.
Yeah.
Of the 160, I'd say 110 of our guests make a living doing narrative.
That's different. That's different. I'm saying 100. I'm saying people that are doing like their passion projects.
Yeah, there's not that many Christopher Nolans.
There's not a lot of people that can go in and get a blank check. Christopher Nolan's, Quentin Tarantino's.
No, but like, it's not about a blank. We're talking about, like, can you make enough money to rent a nice place or buy a place in L.A.?
But then you're still doing commercials and you're doing projects that maybe you don't want to do. Or maybe
So I would counter.
Yeah.
I would say that, like, sometimes, we'll take a job that, or jobs that we aren't. Thrilled about, but you could get yourself to be excited about them for the most part. Because, I think that the show's mission statement is anyone can direct. And I genuinely believe that. And I think you can make a living doing it.
Yeah.
Like, you can, being paid to direct is hard, but once you get there, it is a good living.
Yeah.
And I think that it is, you're making trade-offs sometimes. You know, like, I woke up this morning extra early because I was, like, inspired to write. But still had to go in and to a gig.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm still gigging around. So like I had to go do this other thing. But it is still financially viable.
It's a real way to make money.
Sure. You know, I think that there's
And you can do it without being famous.
Without being famous. Yeah, yeah. You don't have to be Steven Spielberg.
I agree with that. Yeah, I completely agree with that.
You know, and you can like...
And you don't have to get 10 million views on YouTube.
You don't have to do that either. Yeah, I completely agree.
But I think your point is it's easier to make a living the way we do if you're if you're putting yourself out there.
Yes. I'm also saying that if you take all the people that want to be filmmakers in the world, it's hard to make a living directing. You can, but it's still hard. It's still a hustle. It's still something that you have to work at and try to put yourself into. And I mean, for you guys, I mean, are you saying it was easy then for you guys to feel like you guys were able to direct and make a living off of it?
No.
I mean, I'm sure it's like very hard, right?
It's not for everyone. I think that if you gave everyone the opportunity to live like a couple years doing this, I think 80% of them would be like, you know,
I don't want to do this.
I want a job. You know, I want my weekends back, or I don't want to wake up early or whatever. Like the lifestyle is specific, you know.
The highs are high and the lows are low.
The lows are low.
Yeah.
And do you feel like it's gotten easier then as you guys have continued on, or do you feel like...
Absolutely not.
Really? So you think it was as hard now after you guys have kind of established yourselves a little bit as when you were first trying to establish yourselves?
I think it's harder now. I think the budgets we get are way bigger, and the number of jobs we get is way fewer.
Yeah.
And that's why it's harder, because when we first started, we were shooting stuff every week.
Yeah.
And now we're shooting stuff once a month if we're lucky.
Yeah.
And so we don't have that. When you're shooting stuff, when you're busy, you're happy, you know?
Yeah.
And when you're losing out on a job, you're very sad. But so when you're doing like $1,000 a day,
Funny or Die shoots.
Yeah, like $1,000 a week, pretty much.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
gigs, but you've got one every week. You're like excited. You're working with people. You're collaborating. When you're doing, you know, $15,000 a day gigs, but you get one every 2 months, you're actually making more money, but you're like,
you feel like you're working less.
You're pitching and you're losing. You're pitching and, you got a job and then it drops out. And then you have a project and it's not going.
You're still pitching more or less the same number of times. So if you don't get those pitches, it's a bigger loss, actually.
Because it feels as if each one is more important, each job that you guys are getting.
Yeah.
No, that makes sense.
And as you get
sense.
Older, like when you're in your 20s and everyone's like sleeping on couches and drinking natty ice or whatever, like, you know, you have your time when you're like, don't care about things. But when you're like getting older and people have kids and people have,
you're like, I need this, mortgages, I need this $15,000 job. I need this to be able to.
Yeah, health insurance. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Do you know how much it costs to have a kid in LA?
It's over $1 million or something.
I actually don't know. Like, I meant the medical part. Well, but I don't know that either.
Well, that,
but you have to have health insurance.
What I'm talking about is the couches thing. Because, again, you guys can tell me, too, about what the audience is that listens to this podcast. But I feel like there's a lot of people. I think my experiences with Aperture and with Indie Mogul is that there's a lot of people out there that have a DSLR. Mm-hmm. They want to be a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. They want to be a director. They would love to be in your shoes where they have a $15,000 commercial. And like just that idea to them is just so insurmountable and impossible to them.
Sure.
And those people, it's almost like paralysis, right? They're just like stuck. They don't know what move to make, you know?
Mm-hmm. And there is freedom in being that predator, right?
There is
freedom in being like, you know what? I don't need to go to film school because I can do everything myself. And maybe the first film isn't good and maybe the 20th film isn't good, but eventually you're going to get better incrementally.
Were you guys predators prior to commercial directing? So you guys jumped straight into just directing.
No, I was more of a predator. I mean, I would like, I kind of came up during like the days of Super Deluxe and Adam Film. Actually, Matt worked on the other side at Comedy Central at that
time. Absolutely,
but I was pitching and shooting and editing and writing and casting. And, you know, we'd hire crew, but and more or less me and whatever friend I was working with, we would do everything on
that. Hell, that's so hard.
Yeah,
hell. That's terribly hard.
Oren can operate a camera, and I don't want to say I can't, but I haven't. You know what I mean?
You don't have to.
But you never geeked out about auto white balance or anything.
That's the dream. People want that. What I'm saying is that I'm not saying go be an online content creator if you've already directed commercials. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying that online content isn't what it used to be of just like, this is all like cat videos and stuff like that.
Well, and I created a web series called Squaresville. that was like an early TV quality style show, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so
you did this personal project on your own money.
Correct.
Where did you release it?
YouTube.
YouTube.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. Yeah. You guys are literally the indie online content dream.
Sure. That is. Yeah. I feel like we're agreeing, and it sounds like an argument.
It does.
Yeah. Well, the one thing we're disagreeing on is like how. I guess I came in saying, if you are a filmmaker, mm-hmm. I prefer, like, if you call yourself a director, I think that's cooler than if you call yourself a video content creator.
I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think we all agree.
What I'm saying is that you can be a director and make content about directing. Mm-hmm. And that's not a bad way to sell yourself, to put your reel out there, to get people to know and follow your work. If you're a DP, you can be a DP first and then make content about being a DP.
I mean, every DP posts on Instagram.
But when you introduce yourself, like if you're the CEO,
you should
of
never
Rogaine.
Introduce yourself as I'm a content creator. But it does help to be like, hey, I'm a DP, and then don't even mention it. And they'll look you up.
Yeah.
They will. They're going to look you up, and then they're going to look up your following. And that kind of helps to be like, this is the most followed Instagram DP.
Or like, oh, these shots are dope.
Or these shots are dope.
Somehow we've gotten you to interview us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that happen to you often?
Well, you do have your own podcast.
So, I do have my own podcast.
So that's maybe your hosting instincts are just kicking in.
It's fun, too. It's fun because we're hanging out and talking.
Your background as a DP? Is that how you... Did you go to film school?
I came out as a film school,
UCLA?
UCLA.
I went to UCLA film school.
No way.
Yeah, undergrad.
Why are you talking about... You're talking about USC, yeah, sure. Matt. Is it
no, because I studied engineering. Computer science and engineering.
That would do it. Went to film school. I was kind of the golden boy in film school. Being totally honest.
Undergrad or grad?
Undergrad. Total waste of time.
Right. Well, UCLA is only 2 years, right?
Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah.
I think it was a total waste of time.
It's a real gamble, too, right? Because you can't... you can't apply. That's true.
Yeah, they've apparently changed it recently.
Oh, good.
So I went in for undergrad.
But Coppola went there, right? Who went there?
Some big wigs. People.
Coppola did.
What I'm trying to say is that it was not worth any of it.
So you didn't find any peers or practice?
I did, but if you're going there to learn practical things, I think you'll learn close to nothing. Point being is that I think film school was a total waste of time, but... just did the Predator thing, and then I started working over at Studio 71.
So what is Studio 71?
Studio 71 is a multi-channel network, so it's for YouTube creators.
Was it The Collective?
Yeah, that was CDS. They were the same thing. Yeah. So changed into Studio 71.
Did you work at when it was called The Collective?
Yeah, at CDS. So I was just doing kind of indie commercials at the time, and they were just really small, kind of low-budget stuff. I came onto my friend's production company. I had a mentor that shot kind of all the Discovery Shark Week stuff. Oh, so cool. I would go on as kind of his B-cam shooter. So I would help out and shoot this content. And I was able to help out as I came on as like a B-string director. So I did a lot of their, like the BMW corporate in-house videos, educational things like that. Like
industrial
stuff. But I made a living, I made a living as an actual shooter director,
Wait, so you were an employee of Studio 71 or you were freelance?
So first I went freelance. And then I ended up going on to Studio 71. And when I came on to Studio 71, I ended up just kind of helping out on the management side. So I came from there. And then basically, I was just helping out one of my directing mentors, who was just kind of bringing me on to all that Shark Week stuff. And at one point, I was just helping him out with a gig. He was like, it's kind of a low-paying gig, but if you can help me out, it'd be great. He's like, I'm going to pay you back on something 6 months later. I end up dropping off some lenses. I'm shooting a little project, dropping off a kit of some CP2s. At a DP's house, and on the couch is sitting the director, and the director looks over and he's like, oh my gosh, Ted, I never paid you back for that thing. And I was like, this is a crazy...
The director that owed you the favor.
Yeah. I'm sitting down on this couch and he's like, it's like 11 p.m. dropping off some lenses. And he says, I never paid you back for that thing. Oh my gosh. No, I said I was going to do something. I said I was never, ever going to ask people to help me out without
flake
paying them
you.
Back on
yeah,
something.
Yeah.
Flake. And I'm like, dude, it's fine. I literally don't care. I'm fine with helping out. It's not a big deal. And he literally tells me, he's like, no. Hey, you want a job? And I'm like, no. Any job that gets offered at 11 p.m. in the middle of the night is an awful job. I don't want this. And he's like, no. Like, this company offered me this job, and I'm planning. He's head of digital development over at ABC right now. He's like, I'm going this new ABC job. And I think you'd be really good for it. And I was like, no, don't want this. Not at all. But work was kind of slow at the time. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go in and see and just do an interview and we'll see how it goes.
Just see what's up.
Yeah, absolutely. So I head on out and probably 30 miles east of LA.
Wait, is there a job title for this job? Or
there's, it's just helping manage an up and coming gear company.
Okay.
And I was like, I'm not really interested, but I was kind of a gear nerd at the time. I'd geek out about the specs. I read the online, you know, sure, all the periodicals about what was new and coming out. And I met at the time who was the kind of our initial investor of Aperture. And we sit down, we have this conversation, and I'm kind of spooked out because it's this like empty warehouse and there's like a spotlight basically there and there's a chair and sit down and I have this quick little interview.
What do you think of the light though, huh? And looks good, this light.
Yeah, I already said no. I basically walked in and was just like, hey, I don't really think this is for me, but like, nice to meet you. Maybe I can recommend somebody else. And we hit it off and we start talking about gear and his whole thing is, he's like, hey, I come from this thing called Digital Rev TV. I think there's all this online content being made now and here's the thing, is that I think that gear companies right now aren't making stuff for them. They're making stuff for studios. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you right now that it's like a weird thing right now when normal people buy stuff that's priced for studios. Like Disney asks you, they're like, hey, how much do you want to buy a light? And Disney, if it's Disney, if they're your client, it's like, you know, F you. It's like 7K sure, a light. Don't right. care. So we end up having this long conversation about gear. He asks me to bring a couple pieces of gear that I really loved at the time. Mm-hmm. I had not going to name drop here, but I had
light panel.
No. I brought like shoulder rigs and stuff like that. And yeah. I remember he was pointing out and he was like, that shoulder rig right there probably costs, you know, anywhere between $15 to $16 to make material costs.
Right. Right.
And he's like, and is the R&D that crazy on this kind of thing? It's like two bike handles. So he's like pointing out all this stuff. He's like, hey, this, whatever this is that's happening right now is going to blow up. It's going to be a thing. Indie filmmakers are going to start taking more and more jobs. And a lot like the current structure of like, you know, you've got agency commercials and things mm-hmm. like that. Here's the thing is that that world is kind of getting smaller right now.
Sure, yeah.
And
yeah,
all these
are they're taking down. Smaller and smaller rates for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
The margins are shrinking. The budgets yeah. are going down.
And look, I know I'm sure there's a lot of high-end people that they hate this and they put all the blame on the online content creators sure. and they put all the blame on all these new indie filmmakers. And it's like, look, this is going to happen. This is just what happens when the internet happens and when a really small kind of niche craft becomes open and accessible for mm-hmm. everyone to do,
right.
all the rates are going to drop. It's just going to happen.
Well, I think the blame isn't it. Yes, some people are just like bitter, but other people, I think like us, are upset when the number of subscribers you have is more important than your talent.
I hate it. I think it's the dumbest thing in the world, but what's the quote? It's like the internet won, get over it. It's like, I hate it. It's so true, honestly. Yeah. And what's funny about me is that I think people think that I'm like super social media savvy, but it's like, here's the thing. I don't check anything online. I don't post. I have a thing that blocks my Facebook feed. I don't post to Instagram.
Wait, do you have
my
a
assistant
for real?
Helps me post everything on Instagram. I don't read anything online because it's mind numbing for me and it gives me a headache and I can't do it. I literally can't do it, but I will post and I'll be a part of it because I realize how important it is. And real quick, for the Aperture story, we blew up because this online filmmaking community embraced us. Mm-hmm. And now, after 2-3 years of doing it, if you're online making content, you're using Aperture gear. And now, because of that...
And Disney, Aperture makes lights? What else?
We do... It's all lights.
Oh, you don't just do like rigs, the handheld, no, the shoulder lights. Rig?
No, I was just bringing that
you
in.
You know, they're real cheap to make, you know.
No, I'm not interested in making anything like that. So... We blew up from there, and now it's like, you know, Disney, Warner Brothers, they all use our lights on their studio sets now. We're on the 3-ton, 5-ton crib trucks, and it's like...
Is it because you're more affordable?
It's because we're more affordable, but we wouldn't need to be there at all. We could be fine just with the indie filmmaking community. But now we've reached a point that's like, because we're self-sufficient, and because, you know, with the old model, it was like you had to make a certain amount of money mm-hmm. on each studio buy. Because you weren't going to sell that many lights. There's just right. not that many customers in the yeah, world.
Right.
But now everyone's a customer.
And
everyone's
also,
shooting video now. And
LEDs, are, yeah. like it's you can run on house power. You're not going to burn the building down. There's
absolutely.
There's like a confluence of things that made this possible that it yeah. couldn't have happened 50 years ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But are you guys, you're not 100% LED, are you?
We're all LEDs. Yeah.
Oh, really? So 100%?
We're all LED.
And what's again, you've got a new yeah. light that's super dope. you know, it's relatively punchy, but you can add like an attachment to it and make it more
Bones Mount.
Kind of like a Joker, but an LED version.
Yeah, exactly. So,
but you know how much a Joker costs? Like $8,000.
$8,000.
Yeah,
like and
between four to six,
you could put one Joker on one circuit. If you put anything else on that circuit, your whole house goes down.
You're talking about tungsten. HMIs are pretty efficient, but yeah.
I guess that's true. That's the advantage of a Joker. But my point is, though, is that we're even talking about balancing things on different circuits is a thing that if you're 25, you don't even fucking know why we're talking about it.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
I guarantee there's the new generation coming up is going to be like, ultra bright monitors. Why do I need that? It's like, no, because you literally couldn't see your monitor if you were in the sun.
You
would cut a cereal box just to see your like literal monitor. You know, like we've all seen it. We've all seen people, DPs, like putting their shirt over their head trying to look at the monitor.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got like decently big sets too. Like,
they've got
like,
the lower back is sunburned.
Yeah. Because and all of a sudden we've got a bunch of people that don't need to be trained on generators, that don't need to be trained on power distribution.
Well, are the people that are selling gloves pissed off at you guys?
everyone again, it's like, here's the thing though, if we didn't exist, it would still come. If not us, it'd be somebody else.
Right.
You know? And I think the point that I'm trying to make is just like, it's so weird that right now the studios use us. And they love us and they tell us the costs are great. It's fantastic. We love this. We couldn't believe things could be so affordable. But it's like, yeah, the only reason it's affordable is because like there's a bunch of owner operators that buy the stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have so five customers anymore.
Right, right.
We don't have to make 50% margin on things. We can make 5% margin off a whole bunch of people. And it's okay. And it makes everything cheaper. Everything's more affordable. It's a weird world out there.
Yeah.
So, it was doing Aperture for 5-6 years. We did a whole bunch of film lighting tutorials. We brought on a bunch of awesome DPs. Andy Riz came on. We brought up a whole bunch of just like fantastic kind of like Netflix.
And you just met him online.
Yeah. And honestly, because we were so popular online, because we were just a part of this online filmmaking community, we would just reach out to people. And like big people are online too. Like Claudia Miranda's online. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, huge ASC guys are online. And we would just talk to people, reach out and say, hey, do you want to come on and just teach some lighting tutorials?
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, we started growing a little Aperture Lighting channel. It's all free. It's just lighting educational tutorials.
Well, and it's also what perfect marketing.
It's perfect marketing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I think our whole thing is like, if it smells like marketing, that's because it's... Are you allowed to curse on this channel?
Sure, yeah.
Because it smells like shit marketing. It's terrible. If it smells like marketing, that's because it's shit marketing. And we don't have to be... I can just tell people too. It's like, yeah, of course it's marketing, but it's also educational stuff that you want to learn anyways.
We're showing you how to light something with our lights.
Yeah, exactly.
If you want to learn how to do that.
Absolutely.
It works for all lights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with the Indie Mogul thing, it was really that, honestly, for a while I'd been thinking about just starting up a YouTube channel about just educating and really it's because I wanted to learn more about filmmaking. And when I started doing this lighting channel, I had all these people reaching out to me. I had people that like drone operators reach out to me. I had, you know, fantastic, like I had the guy that shot Steadicam on The Revenant came out and like literally all these people all of a sudden, like fantastic cinematographers were reaching out and saying like, oh, you know, like I would love to be a part of this channel sometime. And it was just a freaking marketing lighting channel. Like it was literally commercials. And all of a sudden I'm meeting all these filmmakers. I'm meeting all these cinematographers from this online space. And I couldn't bring them onto the show because it's a lighting channel. I can't talk about Steadicams. I can't talk about cameras.
Right.
So with Indie Mogul, I had been thinking about starting my own channel for a while, and then the timing happened to be perfect. Me and Justin Johnson ended up talking online, and I reached out, and he was like, hey, do you know of anybody that would be a good host for Indie Mogul? Because you know a lot of these online creators. And I was like, well, funny you say that. You know, I'm thinking about doing this.
Well, yes, I do. And just to make sure that everyone's on the same page, Indie Mogul is kind of a longstanding early YouTube channel. It was actually one of the next new network channels that like Kathleen Grace helped found. She was on a couple episodes ago. That was hosted by Eric Beck and
Justin Johnson.
And then who there was an
Griffin Hammond.
Griffin, and then there was one other dude.
Zach Finnerock.
Yeah, that's who I'm thinking of.
Even Grace Randolph came from Indie Mogul. It's honestly, it's like there's a kind of a legendary history to this.
Yeah, it's and you know, it was built on like kind of the same sort of ethos that we're all talking about of like, hey, you can make movies too.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can melt a face just like in Indiana Jones with some cool crayons and a blow dryer.
Yes. And like, I think the reputation of it was for being like super DIY. I'm not that guy, right?
Right.
And here's the thing is that like most of the reason, the way that I'm doing the show is I've got some amazing guests. Like I've got the guy that shoots aerials for, he was on the new Top Gun. literally just before this podcast, because of Indie Mogul, this guy reached out and was like, hey, I shoot aerials for like Top Gun. Do you want to come shoot, like come hang out and be on this heli shoot? Yeah, so literally 2 hours ago, I was sitting on a helicopter with him. The only reason that this happened is because we just started making some content about lighting.
Sure, yeah.
And all of a sudden, the world opens up. And I think as filmmakers, we love to be like hermits and like not talk to other people and like not meet people. And it's like there is, I think a lot of people think that filmmaking isn't really a communal thing. And you know, what I'm doing right now in terms of online content is not filmmaking. I'm not going to claim that it is. But it is video creating, and it's people that are passionate about the process of making, mm-hmm. you know, cinematic footage. And for those people, there's totally a community, man. There's totally people out there, and like you just start making stuff, and you'll reach out, and you'll find all these other filmmakers that are out there too. So,
do you think there could be too many people making content about filmmaking?
100%. There already is.
Have to really like watch my diet of like content about content.
Do you consume a lot of content? This is content about content.
No, I know. Well, and I listen to every episode of this show in addition to recording it. And then, you know, like I'll listen to The Moment is the new one that we just got turned on to, or like to
what's The Moment?
The Moment is Ted Koppelman, who wrote Rounders and is the showrunner on Billions now.
Wow.
And he's like pretty fascinating. He's like got a lot of swagger and then like gives screenwriting advice, but also just interviews other creative people. He was a record executive before this, which I didn't realize. So, you know, there's that. There's Sam Jones. You know, there's if you wanted to only learn about filmmaking and other artists, it would be easy, especially
it's so easy now.
Mostly you're listening to podcasts on a commute to Burbank.
Yeah, your question's a really good one. Is there ever a point that there's too much content about making content? And it makes me want to vomit when I hear it. I'm like, oh, it sounds gross. Like, I don't want to be a part of that. I think the way that the world is going in, there's two things that are happening. One, and again, like, I want to pull my hair out as I hear it. But you know what? The internet won. Get over it. It's already happening. One, every business is going to try to become an influencer. And every influencer is going to try to make a business out of their influence. And I think that applies for freelancers as well to some extent. I think, yes, there's like your kind of, you know, let's call them tentpole content houses about making content, right? But the days of BuzzFeed and all these like big video houses are gone. BuzzFeed's not popular anymore. BuzzFeed laid off a bunch of staff. And you know what? A lot of people say that's because online content's dying. No. That's not what's happening. What's happening is you're getting super nichified. This is the stuff that political people complain about, that everyone's in an echo chamber. It is going, that applies to professional stuff. Mm-hmm. The cinematography about music videos that look like this is now a chamber. And you can follow somebody in that space that does content about that exact thing. The cinematography about people that do comedy and just sketches like SNL, that there's an influencer in that space as well. And what I'm trying to say is that, and there's one person who's really excited about it, and there's one person who's kind of dry and talks about like this. And I think Bo Burnham was talking about it. He was like, you know, it's hell, right? Everybody is all of a sudden a creator and a consumer at the same time. But I think that's happening. And if that's the case, then no, there's never a limit to the number of people that make content about making content. It's just, there's a lot of them now. There's more competition. But it's never too late to start doing it because you're already doing, you're posting on Facebook. Are you posting on Instagram? Right. You're already one of those people.
I guess to me love to overgeneralize, but there's two types of people.
Yeah.
There's the people that make content and then show how they made it, right? Mm-hmm. Like Freddie W, like the behind the scenes. I kind of think like what Matt and I are like.
This channel is, you guys go do professional projects and then you talk about the behind the scenes of it.
And then there's people who only talk about how to make stuff.
Yes.
And those are the people that I feel like are contributing something, but it's maybe not as
genuine to.
It's not that it's not genuine. It's just it's not like artistic. Or, I don't know. Unless they have a real, like a Tony Shay.
Every frame painting.
He's breaking down how people make things, but it's so artistic the way he does it, and he's a storyteller, you know?
Absolutely.
And he happens to be telling stories about storytellers.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we all can agree that there's a spectrum of like full-on snake oil
Yeah,
and that's purist, the dangerous, right?
That's the danger.
But it's not even snake oil. Like the person that's like, I'm going to unbox this camera and tell you all what the buttons
are. Sure, sure. But
it's not snake oil. It's just like,
look, there have been times on this show where we'll make a joke out of it, but we will answer, say, a listener question that we are vaguely qualified to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? But you have to be really careful that you're not purporting to yourself as an expert. Like, we are experts in a very specific and narrow thing that we are doing, and we're trying to be clear about what that is. Yeah. But it's easy to just kind of like,
I'm the master of shooting weddings. I am the master of, I'm the master of comedy sketches. And I think because of this new world and because of this exact creator thing that's happening, everybody all of a sudden acts like an expert. Mm-hmm. I'm the expert of this. I'm the expert of this. And I don't know what the solution is to that, because I get it, right? If you're a viewer, you want to listen to someone that has some authority, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, even on Indie Mogul, like the way that I do it is I'm like, hey, I'm an idiot. I'm stupid. I don't know what's going on.
Right. You get to be the audience proxy of, like,
I'm going to bring on. Yeah. I don't know how to shoot aerials. I've never been in I haven't been in a helicopter in 15 years when I went on vacation in Las Vegas. You know, I haven't done any of this. But here's this guy that's super freaking good at this, and let's interview him about this.
But so let's take a step out, because you're not saying everyone start a YouTube channel about filmmaking or a podcast about filmmaking, mm-hmm. right? What are you saying practically in terms of the person who's in a smaller market who lives in Michigan and has been shooting a bunch of videos, right? Yeah. Like, maybe does some local commercials, maybe works at a news station, you know, kind of is living the hustle of like a smaller market sort of situation.
I'm saying it's not too late to start curating a social media presence for yourself, and however you want to do it, right? If it's a podcast, if it's YouTube, if it's Instagram, like, I know people that, like, literally, like, do you guys listen to those playlists on YouTube? The guy doesn't make the music. He just, like, curates a bunch of Majestic Casual and, like, that kind of stuff.
Like, the lo-fi tunes to study.
Lo-fi tunes. You know, that stuff.
Yeah.
You know that guy's throwing concerts now? He, like, represents musicians now.
And it's like a crazy phenomenon.
It's a whole thing now.
Ted, I want to ask you just to clarify. Are you saying one way in to get jobs and be more known and get and build a community is to have a social presence? Or are you saying it's really hard to make it without a social presence?
I'm saying you can make it without a social presence. I think every day that goes by, your social presence starts to become more important. Yeah. And I don't like it either, but it's happening. And, you know, it's like, you know, 10 years ago, if you were an actor or an actress, nobody cared about how many Zanga friends you had. Sure. That wasn't a thing.
Sure.
But now it's like, they do look at this stuff. Without and like, it's in the same way that like, do you guys remember when people started like, they were like, oh, you got to Google your name because employers are going to like Google your name after you walk out of that interview room, because you got to make sure that there's not some photo of you getting drunk in Daytona. Like, that equivalent, I think, is starting to happen for filmmakers. And I think
without a doubt,
you guys are fortunate to have jumped that already. I think you guys have been able to.
You still have to have a reel. You still have to have a website that looks good.
But those are like the goal. That's like the dream. I just have to be seen. My work just has to be seen, and they'll recommend me from that. I think you guys are actually more established. You guys were able to jump past that. I think for people that are just starting off now, I think that they are maybe being judged less heavily on their work and a lot more on their social media. And I hate it.
Yeah.
But I think that it's hard. It's both. One, it's hard now to do it without any kind of, essentially you need like marketing experience to be able to market yourself online. Two, it does help a lot to just have some kind of presence. And I'm not saying you got to make some how-to channel about how to shoot weddings or something. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying like, find some way. You don't even have to make it yourself. Again, you can curate content. I'm not saying steal content. I'm just saying like, you know, you can curate an aesthetic of things that like represent things that you like. Mm-hmm. And then maybe people will follow that. And then you can say, oh, I curate that thing. And like, look, it's always hell starting this stuff off in the beginning. But the second that everyone can do it and it's no problem to start, that's when there's no more value in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not too late. If you were to do it now, in the same way that I think this podcast, I'm not saying that you guys are doing it for that reason. I'm just saying that in the same way that I think this podcast is a fantastic thing to have as a filmmaker, just as a resource of a way to, you know, kind of have a following, have an audience that likes your opinion, your view take on things. I it's just such a valuable thing for someone to have right now.
We have, I guess, the podcast, we have websites, and we have, you know, my Instagram's doing Doing okay. But if I'm a listener to this podcast and I hear you saying like, and I've just made this amazing short film and I just got into a festival, mid-tier festival, and I'm working on my feature script. And then I hear you say, oh, now I have to go build this online presence. It's just exhausting. Stressful.
It is stressful. I think it's the same way that any business owner feels. Oh, I want to start a headband company. I want to start a headphones company.
I can't tell you how many times I've told my in-laws. They have two car shops in Ohio. And I'm like, why? You guys have two reviews on Yelp. Get more Yelp reviews. They're like, we don't want to waste time.
I don't want to spend time on Yelp, but is Yelp important? Yeah. Oh, gosh. It's so, my dad has a restaurant in D.C. And, he sweats so much thinking about Yelp reviews. I'm not saying I like it. I'm just saying it's important and it's probably here to stay.
And you have to be aware of the fact that filmmaking is
a business.
Is a business. And also, you are a brand that's in the public eye in a way that's different than other professions.
Definitely. Right? Again, there are people that can get jobs and just say, oh, this is an amazing director. He's done the kind of work that I want to do. But I think a lot of people also view it as, what's this director's brand? Sure. Do I want this brand of humor?
If you as a director want people to hire you for your taste, you need to show people what your taste is.
Yeah, you don't have to make how-tos to do that. You can talk about the movies you like. You can curate some art that you like. There's just a lot of creative ways to do it now. Look, imagine you're a producer. You're sitting there. You got two DPs. They're both great. Seen both the rails. They're both great. Who are you gonna hire? You're gonna hire the one with 10K or 100? And I hate it, right? But it's just a thing now. And I don't like it.
I'm not totally convinced that numbers are a thing.
It's more relationships and stuff will always come first.
Yeah.
Whether someone likes your personal taste.
If your Instagram feed is cool and matches what I'm looking at.
It's happening right now in photography. Again, the reason I'm plugged into the photography world because of Aperture, they're an audience of ours. Most of the photography podcasts or photography channels, like almost everybody has an episode about a photographer that's lost gigs because of social media following. And that's just like, it's horrible.
Yeah.
And I think it's coming to filmmaking is what I'm trying to say.
That's real. And I think maybe we're just unplugged.
Reluctant. And I don't want it. I don't want it. I hear about the golden days of sitting on the curb by a film set. A grip comes over and is like, hey, you want a job in the movie industry? Come be my apprentice. Come hang. That sounds great. Oh, gosh. My skin crawls. I want it, But
here we are.
We should probably wrap things up pretty soon. Sure. But I'm curious what are you building towards anything specific? Like, would you want a DP, a big studio film, or direct more TV episodes?
What's the five-year plan for
Tetsim? Or is the five-year plan more about growing Indie Mogul and Aperture?
Man, that is a deep question.
Sure,
why have I not heard this?
The tables have turned.
I do a lot of interviews. Indie Mogul is the same way as what you guys are talking about. There's not really a plan. And I'm kind of embarrassed to say that too, because I'm putting a bunch of my own time and I'm putting a bunch of my own resources into it.
Yeah.
But the reason we're doing Indie Mogul is because the opportunity was there. I know I wanted to start this channel, and I just thought we could do a really good job at it. Because we already do the Aperture lighting stuff. I've been doing that for 4 or 5 years, teaching lighting tutorials about this stuff. And when I say teaching, I mean bringing guests on and learning from them.
Wait, can I rephrase my question? Sure. What gets you more excited, teaching people about filmmaking or making films?
Making films, of course. I went to film school.
Well, yeah, but that's not, I feel like that's the default answer, but it's not always.
Sure. And look, week to week, if you compare the amount of time I spend on this podcast to working the gig that I'm on to writing the passion project, sometimes it looks like clearly I'm, shirking my other responsibilities and I'm writing basically full time.
Yeah.
And sometimes it looks like I want to be a full time podcaster. And that's kind of like week to week. Do you know what I mean?
I do understand what you mean.
I mean, hosting this podcast is more fun than being in my room writing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like nice just to have a distraction that
it's
feels
so
productive.
Nice to, you but know? It is productive. It Again, is productive, I'm saying it is productive. You guys are meeting cool people and you guys are talking to, not me, obviously, but the other people that you have on this podcast. Cool people.
Very cool. And I think that really ultimately your point, and this is...
You have certainly a platform, the thing, audience.
You have an audience, and things that stack, right? Ted Koppelman was talking about this on the episode I was listening to on the way over. Just putting in the time a couple hours a week, a few years from now, all of a sudden you've got a thing that is going to pan out in ways that you can't expect.
And as long as it doesn't die, it'll grow.
Yeah.
And like, I think people think like, oh, it has to take off immediately. It's like, no, just keep doing it. Just keep doing it and you'll never know what's going to happen. Answer your question. Yeah, filmmaking. Absolutely. I went to film school. I want to make movies. But I think somewhere along the line, I just started having so much fun with the gear stuff and just having so much fun, like making lights and like just like being able to design and like work. Like we actually like help and design. We'll literally like draw up. I'm not unlike you. I didn't go to engineering school, went to film school. So for me to be able to like sit there, hear a bunch of feedback online and be able to like work on like CAD drawings for new lights, that's awesome. That's like the coolest thing in the world.
Yeah, it's incredible.
And to be able to have this experience with Indie Mogul now, like again, I was like, all I know is that we can do a good job with this channel. All I know is that I know a bunch of cool filmmakers that come on and teach some stuff. And now all of a sudden it's like, yeah, you know, I just got off a helicopter like that. I never would have had that experience.
You flew all over the world too, right?
Yeah, flew all over the world. Just I had the awesome experience of talking to all my favorite filmmakers, Cinematography Database, Matt Workman, just like I just meeting all my heroes. And
Wait, but why do you want to be a filmmaker? Why not? I mean, you could probably make more money owning a lighting company.
Absolutely. It's way more
being a filmmaker.
Why does anybody want to be a filmmaker?
You went to film school, you feel like you owe it to your parents or something?
No, I think everybody wants. I mean, filmmaking is awesome. I don't even know how to answer that. It's amazing. It's what I want to do long term. But I think for now, I'm I think people always think of it as in like you're either doing it or you're not, you know? And it's like, am I talking to a bunch of filmmakers? Am I on set? I'm probably on set like 150 days out of the year. Am I like meeting a bunch of fantastic people? Like, yes. Am I making movies? No. But, you know, when that day comes, I don't think it's a bad place to start. Mm-hmm. And in the meanwhile, guys, you gotta eat. Gotta eat. And in the meanwhile, I really like this thing. I'm having a lot of fun. People always approach it as in like, you have one passion in life and everything else is shit. No, it's like, no, that's not the case. Like, I have fun doing this. I have fun doing Indie Mogul. And in the meanwhile, it gets to scratch kind of a creative itch. But maybe it's not, you know, it's not me at my fullest putting myself on the screen so everyone can see. That's not what's happening here.
Yeah, I guess I've just been thinking a lot about like how you can define yourself by what you say you are. But really what you are is like what you spend your time on.
You're 100%
and
right.
So you can
in that
say,
case, I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a video creator. And I'm a host. And in that case, am I doing exactly what I want to be doing? I don't think it's that easy of a question. When I go to bed, I'm still thinking about making movies, but I'm having a lot of fun, and I'm not mad at the way that things are going. I'm just having a good time, and you know, I think the Indie Mogul for me is also just a big step in trying to be able to get back onto set, mm-hmm. be able to shoot content, make my own stuff. Be able to do my own thing and do it as a personal project outside of Aperture. So maybe it's not a huge step, but for me, it's kind of baby steps towards making original things that are mine, showing myself, being able to express myself. It's already been a huge step for me to be like, hey, it's Ted from Aperture, where I was like a little bit more corporate, to just being like, hey, it's Ted. Today we're going to talk about whatever the hell I feel like talking about.
Right,
so like, right. I feel really good about the direction things are going in.
Can I ask just a functional question about the way the channel works? Are there other people involved?
I think anyone that's online has someone behind them that helps them out. The good thing about Aperture.
Shout out to Jay and Madeline.
Our
producer and Jay, our editor.
Thanks, Jay. Appreciate it. I think anyone online has a little team that helps them out. Even if the thing about this stuff is that it has to feel like it's just like one or two people that are doing it. And there's always people that help out. The good thing about Aperture is that I already have a team that makes Aperture content. Mm-hmm. So I already had a shooter, an editor. I already had a director and a producer that would pull together all those shoots. With Indie Mogul, because it's a personal project and because it's my own funds into it, it's just two people. I have my best friend, Min, who's basically just an amazing editor. He comes from Disney, basically helping out in the in-between because he's like, oh, this sounds like a fun project. I would like to, instead of doing, he was doing mostly commercials, but he was like, I want to be able to just pry this YouTube thing out. Why the heck not? Min helps me out. He cuts it. That's why the channel looks the way it does. And then I also have Tway, who's an amazing content creator, who's honestly was just an intern at Aperture. And I was like, you're too good at this. Get over here and come help make Indie Mogul content. People look at it and they think it's just me. But again, people also look at Aperture and they look at me and they also think it's just me. And I'm like, are you, somehow people think that like I'm sitting in a lab somewhere, sure, like making lights and shooting videos. And it's like, no, hell no. This is absolutely not. I try to say whenever I can that it's a team, but it's like, sometimes people just don't listen. But again, it's funny because people think that I'm doing Indie Mogul to sell Aperture. And I'm like, guys, do you know how much work it takes to make videos not about Aperture to sell Aperture? There's like a million other ways. I could buy magazine ads. I could do literally a million other things to sell Aperture. But I think one of the things that helped out was just hearing and seeing me. Somehow people are like, oh, it's not a company. I'm just like connecting with somebody. Mm-hmm. People love that stuff. And I think I didn't really realize it either, but like if you're a business owner out there, I don't care who you are, do whatever it takes to put yourself in front of the camera, because as soon as it feels like you're hearing from a rep or you're hearing from someone that was hired, like an mm-hmm. actor, to be like, hey, you should buy Ridge Wallets, because we're giving Ridge Wallets a lot of attention now. They don't sponsor this podcast. But just to come out there and be like, hey, this is who I am. I've done full cost breakdowns too. On other podcasts, I've just been like, this is how much it costs to make a like. This is how much we think of the B&H. This is how much we think. And people freaking love that stuff. Sure. They're like, yeah, oh my gosh, so honest. Transparency. Yeah, yeah. And I think it's because we live in a time where we're so used to getting marketed to that it's like now when we feel like we're getting marketed to, there's like this like, oh, it like strikes a weird chord in you. Which is why I think all this like, which is why I shoot in 30 frames per second for YouTube content.
Yeah.
Only for YouTube content, for nothing else, because it feels a little bit more real.
Yeah. Well, we should definitely wrap things up because we're running really, it's really interesting. This is actually one of the more meta interviews we've had.
Yeah. And more gear oriented than normal.
We always talk about when people ask us, like, what camera should we get? We should check out Indie Mogul or a place like that because they are better suited to answer that question than we are.
Thank you.
Amen.
It's a Panasonic GH5, by the way.
Is that right?
GH5S. Yeah, it's a great DSLR if you're thinking about buying a camera.
We'll talk about that offline. I'm curious, actually. Ted, let's hop into endorsements, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely.
Unpaid endorsements.
The conversation we just had is so perfect for my endorsement.
Okay.
It's a video essay about Waverly Films called My Favorite YouTube Filmmakers. We'll post it in the show notes, but it's so Waverly Films was a filmmaking collective out of Brooklyn right at the dawn of YouTube. Like they actually started posting QuickTime videos before. Are they
like Black Box TV, like similar vibe?
No, goofier.
Okay.
They were kind of, you know, they were gigging around. They were like doing cool music videos. Yeah. They were like doing the Brooklyn thing like when that was especially hip and not, people weren't tired of that at all, right? Mm-hmm. But they would always do like kind of channel 101 style sort of mm-hmm. like super short clips of like different kind of absurdist, sometimes kind of gimmicky sort of videos. Really funny, really weird, and was really influential on this video essayist. Have you figured out his name?
Yeah, Patrick H. Williams.
Patrick H. Williams.
Of course I know him, yeah.
Williams, yeah, yeah. So he basically talks about them as a metaphor for the dawn of early YouTube and the way that things have changed, right? So YouTube now is much more of a nonfiction portal, right? It's about lifestyle and things like that. But to your point, it's not really about being a... It's not a place to exhibit your films
don't
the way we were.
Don't post your short film. Don't post your commercial on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about documenting your life.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of about those guys kind of coming up. And, you know, the punchline is those dudes made Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah.
Like, so they like start and they were digital content creators.
They were the digital people.
And now they're like, you know.
I'm not saying you have
they
to
They made
come
the Sundance
way.
Film too.
Right.
Yeah. Cop car, Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Not saying you have to come up this way. There's a lot of ways you can do it. It's just, this is one option. And if you're feeling particularly stuck, maybe this might be one other way to shake and break loose and do something a little different. And if you're scared of it, that's good, because that means it's actually valuable. Because the second people aren't scared, you know, it's kind of like that thing where you're like, you move to a neighborhood and it's gentrifying and people are like, oh, I would never live there. And you're like, oh, good. That means I'm here at the right time.
Yeah.
The second you say you want to move to this neighborhood, it's too expensive. It's the same thing with online content right now. And if you're cringing right now, it's a good thing because there's a lot of people cringing. And that means it's a decent opportunity.
don't think we're cringing as much as
I'm cringing, but that's okay. But I have fun too. So
yeah, we look at it as one small part of like a bigger hole.
Bigger hole, yeah.
As opposed to the hole.
It's not the hole. It's just one thing you can do.
Cool.
Ted, what you got, buddy?
Here are my two. One, if you're listening to this, you might already know about a guy named Matt Workman that does Cinematography Database. He's a buddy of mine. He's a good friend. He was on the Indie Mogul show and the channel on the podcast. And he does he has this amazing software out called CineTracer. If you don't know what CineTracer is, it's literally a Steam game. It looks exactly like a kind of run-around first-person shooter, but you have all the set tools in there. You can build walls. You can set up lights. You can throw up a frame. You can actually storyboard and previs your entire movie with lighting. With lighting in the actual scene, too. So it's amazing. It's only like $99. I'm not getting paid to say this, but I'm just such a fan of that software. If you're listening to this, love you, Matt. Great guy. Two, I'm going to say there's a podcast out there called The Future. It's Chris Doe's podcast. Are you guys familiar with it?
Mm-mm, no.
Cool. So it's not a filmmaking podcast.
Oh, good.
It's a podcast for designers. And here's the reason why I like it. The reason I like it is because it's not filmmaking, so it kind of like broadens your horizons a little bit. He brings on all kinds of creators. He brings on, but it's mostly design and illustration animators.
Cool.
And again, before you guys check out and be like, no, I'm not an animator. I'm not the whatever. Point being is that he talks about the business of design and the business of being a freelance animator. Mm-hmm. And he does it in a way that is so raw and to the point of like negotiating rate of like being an entrepreneur. And I think at a certain point I realized I was like, you actually don't have to be, if you're looking for some motivation or some business advice, there's so many parallels between design and filmmaking that I think it's really applicable. And a lot of filmmakers overlook it because they don't think it's for them.
You're not talking about The Future, right?
The Future, yeah. It's spelled without an E.
Oh, yes.
You know about him already.
I know him. I watch his YouTube stuff. It's so good.
It's so good. And yeah. Seriously, he talks about like lowballing and about how to like negotiate rate and stuff like that.
Yeah, he does these, and he's like slightly arrogant, right?
He's much nicer in person. He's a very friendly person.
No, I like it because he'll be like, he'll have people that are saying like, hey, you told me that you charge $100,000 for a logo, but I feel weird asking people for even $5,000. He's like, yeah, you're like a $5,000 logo person. I am like a $100,000 logo person. And this is why. And he like breaks it down.
He's a kind of a no fluff, no bullshit kind of guy. And I like that a lot. I recently went over and did an episode with him about content. And he's actually the guy that did all the designs for Indie Mogul. He has the design style guide. And he's amazing. And it's so good. He used to do, you know.
Did you spend $100,000 on him?
Certainly not. But the reason I know him is because of YouTube again. Content. What was I going to try to say? I was going to try to say that if you want like hard, like business advice, great guy to get it from.
Cool.
Good guy for sure.
Yeah. Subscribe. I'm a fan too. I'll double endorse that. Yeah. Or I'll back up that endorsing.
Yeah.
Endorsement. Cool. So me, I just thought of it because you talked about shooting on your 1DX and 30 frames per
second.
You're
endorsing Indie Mogul? I'm kidding.
Yeah, Indie Mogul at Future. But I just, a filmmaker I know, do you know Brian Storkel?
Why does that name sound so familiar?
He made, he's a doc filmmaker. And his wife, Amy, they made this documentary. They actually produced it, and the director is this guy named Theo Love. It's on Netflix right now. It's called The Legend of Cocaine Island. And it's a documentary, but it's like super cinematic and it's like shot beautifully. And it's kind of like a lot of recreations, but some of the people are like, it's about this guy that found out there's like a bunch of cocaine buried somewhere in Puerto Rico. And he's trying to get it to sell it. And basically he builds this whole team to get the cocaine and sell the cocaine so he can make all this money. Cause he used to be rich and now he's not rich anymore. He's trying to make a comeback. And the reenactments are like half with the real people and half with like actors.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's just done in a really stylistic way. It's actually, the story is like kind of really simple, but the style is just really amazing. I haven't seen a documentary that feels like a Tony Scott film, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's what this does. And it, again, reminded me of Abby Fuller, a previous guest and doc filmmaker, talking about taking inspiration from real narrative cinematic films when you approach documentary filmmaking. So Legend of Cocaine Island, it's on Netflix. If we want to find out more about you, Ted.
You can find me on the Indie Mogul channel on YouTube. We do a podcast as well, where we bring on awesome, talented filmmakers. Ours is mostly kind of like set advice and like tutorials and things like that. But yeah, you can find us online basically anywhere. We just kicked off the channel. I am learning things, and if you want to come learn things with me, yeah, it's open door.
Cool. And I am Smitey Pyleg on Twitter and O Kaplan on Instagram.
I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow on all social media. And we are at Just Shoot It Pod for all social media as well. You can drop us an email at justshootitpod@gmail.com if you have any questions, or you can leave us a voicemail, our very favorite way for you to ask us a question, at 2626-SHOOT-1. This episode is edited by Jay McAuliffe, produced by Madeline Rosewatt, and our webmaster is Ewan Williams.
The music you're listening to is from the Free Music Archive, and the artist is Art, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks so much for watching.